The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Georgene Rice Show podcast. This program was originally broadcast live on 93.9 KPDQ. We hope you enjoy the show.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Monday edition of the Georgene Rice Show. Today, I am so looking forward to a conversation with Phyllis Bennett. She's the director of the Women's Center for Ministry and Women's Transformational Leadership at Western Seminary, and Bethany Allen, who's a pastor of spiritual formation and leadership development at Bridgetown Church in downtown Portland. She's also Women's Transformational Leadership Instructor at Western Seminary. Well, Bethany is going to be the keynote speaker at the upcoming Ignite Conference, Arise, Ignite, Compassion. That's coming up on Saturday, March the 7th. We'll tell you all the important details and why you should join us. That's going to be at Cedar Mill Bible Church, again, on the 7th of March. So that's just a couple weeks. Hope you'll plan to join us. First, we'll take a look at some of the day's headlines. Senator Bernie Sanders, the frontrunner for the Democrats' presidential nomination, doubled down on his support for some of Cuba dictators. Fidel Castro's policy, saying in an interview that aired on Sunday, it's unfair to simply say everything is bad. Speaking on CBS News 60 Minutes, Sanders, a self-proclaimed democratic socialist, pointed to social welfare programs introduced under Castro's regime that he described as redeeming, despite the communist dictator's often repressive human rights violations against Cubans. We're very opposed to the authoritarian nature of Cuba, but you know, it's unfair to simply say everything is bad, you know. When Fidel Castro came into office, you know what he did. He had a massive literacy program. Is that a bad thing? Even though Fidel Castro did it, Sanders told Anderson Cooper. Anderson Cooper came back and talked about those who were killed and imprisoned, but that didn't seem to trouble the front runner. President Trump, in his first official visit to India on Monday, was greeted by overflowing crowds in a massive stadium rally where he announced a $3 billion deal that will send state-of-the-art military helicopters to the country. The Namaste Trump rally was a sequel to the Howdy Modi event Trump held with Prime Minister Modi in Houston last September. The president's motorcade passed along seemingly endless crowds in the area, with many cheering and waving American flags on the way to the 110,000-capacity stadium. Large billboards were spread throughout the route showing Trump alongside Modi and his wife, Melania. When Modi handed the podium to Trump, the president thanked those in attendance for the welcome he received, adding that he and Melania would remember the hospitality given. America will always be faithful and loyal friends to the Indian people, he said. Well, the president also touted the peacefulness of India in the past. Later, he announced that he will sell $3 billion worth of state-of-the-art helicopters and other equipment to the country. Well, U.S. equity futures are pointing to a large decline in stocks on Monday morning on concerns about the spread of the coronavirus outside China, with Italy, South Korea, and Iran seeing a big jump in infections. The coronavirus cases spike in several countries has sparked fears of a global pandemic. The major futures indexes are indicating a decline of 2% when trading begins on Wall Street. Economically sensitive oil is tumbling for a second day. U.S. crude is trading at $51.70, down 3%. Brent crude is trading at 56.57, down 3.3%. In Asia, markets, Hong Kong's Hang Seng is down 1.8%, and China's composite is off by 0.3%. Japan's markets all closed for the holiday. Well, the decline is a continuation of the selling the markets experienced on Friday. The S&P 500 index fell 1.1%, while the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 0.8%, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ composite slipped 1.8%. Shelby Pearson misled lawmakers about the Russians helping Trump's reelection. More on that later in the program. And President Donald Trump is touring the Taj Mahal, drawing large crowds in India. Michael Bloomberg has agreed to release three women from non-disclosure agreements his firm signed over comments he made. And in an about face, Elizabeth Warren has welcomed Super PAC help she once shunned. And the president's new spy chief, Richard Grenell, used to work for a foreign politician the U.S. accused of corruption. And Philip Haney, Department of Homeland Security whistleblower during Obama's era, has been found dead. Greyhound has banned immigration checks on buses. And global outbreak has caused the pandemic fears of the coronavirus to jump in Italy, South Korea, and Iran. Well, on this day in history, in a ruling in 1988 that would expand legal protections for parody and satire, the Supreme Court unanimously overturns the $150,000 award to Reverend Jerry Falwell, had won against Hustler magazine and its publisher, Larry Flint. On this day in history, 1582, Pope Gregory VIII issues an edict outlining his calendar reforms. The Gregorian calendar is the calendar in general use today. And in 1761, on this very day, Boston lawyer James Otis Jr. goes to court to argue against writs of assistance that allow British customs officers to arbitrarily search people's premises, declaring a man's house is his castle. Although Otis would lose the case, his statement would provide early inspiration for American independence. And in 1868, on this day, the U.S. House of Representatives impeached President Andrew Johnson by a vote 126-47 following his attempted dismissal of Secretary of War Edwin Stanton. Johnson would be later acquitted by the Senate, as has been the case for every impeachment the country has seen, and there have only been a handful. On this day in 1983, a congressional commission releases a report condemning the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II as a grave injustice. And in 1989, the state funeral is held for Japan, for Emperor Hirohito, who had died the month before at age 87. Finally, in 2008, Cuba's parliament names Raul Castro president, officially ending nearly 50 years of rule by his brother Fidel. A 26-point lead over second place Joe Biden late into the count in Nevada has Bernie Sanders in the lead. And Biden's lead over Sanders in South Carolina, 20 points when the year began, is now down to just about 3. From the Wall Street Journal, Mr. Sanders will now go into the Palmetto State against the same divided field. All of the candidates except for Mr. Sanders and Bloomberg and the fading billionaire Tom Steyer lack the money to compete with more than token TV ads in the Super Tuesday states that follow 3 days after South Carolina. Mr. Bloomberg won't be on the ballot until Super Tuesday. And Rich Lowry explains how Bernie Sanders is the U.S. version of socialists everywhere who have brought their party down. That's an article in Politico. From the story, he writes, his big win after his capture of the popular vote in Iowa and New Hampshire increases fears among some Democrats that a Sanders nomination could cost them both the White House and Congress. And the results could further split the sharply divided party about the best way forward. More moderate candidates were already fighting about who should step aside to allow one person to try to consolidate the vote against him. And in a bizarre telling moment, he told Anderson Cooper, this is once again Bernie Sanders, over the weekend on 60 Minutes, we're very opposed to the authoritarian nature of Cuba, but you know, it's unfair to simply say everything is bad. He then was questioned over some of the bad things that were a part of the Cuban dictator Castro's rule. You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. In our next segment, we're going to give away tickets, a family four-pack of tickets to Amy Barnes' comedy show. That's coming up. We'll give you all the important details when we return. You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show.
You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
We're back 19 minutes after 4 o'clock. You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. As promised, we want to give a family four-pack of tickets away for the Amy Barnes comedy show. Now, she's been here in the Portland area a couple of times. She's absolutely hilarious in a delightful way. Well, she's going to be at the Roxy Theater in Longview, Washington, and we'd love to give away a family four-pack of tickets to that performance on Friday, March the 13th, 7 o'clock p.m. Again, Amy Barnes Comedy Show on the 13th of March, Friday, 7 o'clock p.m. at the Roxy Theater in Longview, Washington. We'd love to give these tickets away to caller number 2, 800-845-2162. That's 800-845-2162, Amy Barnes Comedy Show. And we'll be giving away four packs of tickets every day this week. So check one, Monday, done. Also, later in the program, we're going to talk with Phyllis Bennett, Director of Women's Center for Ministry Western Seminary, and Bethany Allen, who's also a graduate of Western Seminary and teaches there. She's going to be the keynote speaker at the upcoming Ignite Conference, Arise, Ignite Compassion. That's coming up on the 7th of March, a Saturday, at Cedar Mill Bible Church. We'll talk in more detail, but you can check it out at westernseminary.edu/ignite for all the important details and to register. We'd love to see you there. Well, contrary to numerous recent media reports, there is no evidence to suggest that Russia is making a specific play to boost President Trump's reelection bid, according to a U.S. intelligence official on Sunday. In addition, top U.S. election official Shelby Pearson, who briefed Congress on Russian election interference efforts, may have overstated intelligence regarding the issue when speaking to the House Intelligence Committee earlier this month. Well, the Wall Street Journal reported last week, citing people familiar with her work, that Pearson has a reputation for being injudicious with her words and not appreciating the delicate work of corralling federal agencies, technology firms, and state election officials to collaborate on election security. Well, U.S. intelligence officials have publicly testified only that the Russians have been using information warfare ahead of the election. Democrats pressed Pearson on whether Russia was trying to help Trump, and accurate context or perspective to her responses failed to emerge. Well, intelligence agencies have made great strides in preventing Russian interference this year. Russian lawmakers who were in the Pearson briefing noted that Trump has taken on Russia in numerous ways. One official present told the Associated Press the White House has opposed Russia's major proposed pipeline in Germany, provided deadly arms to Ukraine, and accused Russia of violating key arms treaties, among other measures. The whiplash came as fears of Russian interference had gripped the 2020 presidential race following the unverified report in the New York Times and CNN that Russia wanted to help Trump, which CNN has since walked back. There's no evidence to that fact. Then it was reported that U.S. intelligence officials had briefed Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders that Russia was trying to help his campaign, too, although it was unclear how or why the alleged support for the self-described Democratic Socialist was occurring. Pearson told NPR in an interview that aired last month that the Russians are already engaging in influence operations relative to candidates going into 2020. But we do not have evidence at this time that our adversaries are directly looking at interfering with vote counts or vote tallies, something they have not been able to do and have not done. Pearson, appointed in July of 2019 by then Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, has worked with the intelligence agencies, including the CIA, the FBI, and the National Security Agency, as well as the Department of Homeland Security, to identify anyone seeking to interfere with U.S. elections. Pearson told NPR that the U.S. didn't know exactly what the Russians were planning, but she said it's not just a Russian problem. We're still also concerned with China, Iran, non-state actors, hacktivists, and frankly, certainly for DHS and FBI, even Americans that might be looking to undermine confidence in the elections. At an open hearing this month, FBI Director Christopher Wray told the House Judiciary Committee that Russia was engaged in information warfare heading into the November election, but that law enforcement had not seen efforts to target America's infrastructure. He said Russia is relying on a covert social media campaign to divide the American people. Following Sanders' big win in the Nevada caucuses on Sunday, James Carville declared on MSNBC that Russian President Vladimir Putin was the real winner in the race, a claim that drew mockery online, even as it remained a dominant theme among establishment pundits. For example, Dan Pfeiffer, a one-time advisor to former President Obama, went so far as to say Sunday that Russians wanted Sanders to win in order to give Trump the opponent that Trump wants in November. All these scenarios being put together. And CNN national security analyst Asha Rangappa, who briefly served in the FBI, began becoming before becoming a university admissions officer, asserted that the Russia loves Bernie because he, like Trump, plays the U.S. versus them game, and them is anyone who doesn't support him personally. It's destructive, divisive, and encourages disillusionment in our institutions. Sound familiar? Meanwhile, former Vice President Joe Biden has alleged that Russia was deploying a Facebook army against him, although he has acknowledged no one in the U.S. intelligence community informed him of this alleged development. So it's become something of a useful tool to make your point, to oppose your opponent, to cover your own failures in the campaign. We'll wait to see what intelligence actually knows and can tell us. A Senate investigation of the FBI's abuse of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is going to start off with a focus on a mysterious source for Christopher Steele, who disputed much of the former British spy's infamous dossier, according to Senator Lindsey Graham, speaking on Sunday. Graham said his first order of business during the probe will be to interview four FBI and Justice Department officials who interviewed the primary source of Steele's dossier in January of 2017, he said in an interview on Sunday Futures with Maria Bartiromo. The first thing I want to do is call the people who heard from Russian subsources that the dossier is a bunch of bar talk and hearsay. He's referring to an individual identified in the Justice Department Inspector General's report only as primary subsource. The Inspector General's report said the person was Steele's only direct source for information that ended up in the dossier, which the FBI cited extensively in its four applications for FISA orders on Carter Page. The source's statements to the FBI and the Department of Justice officials were explosive, according to the Inspector General's report. It said Steele's source disputed much of what was known and attributed to him in the dossier, which was founded by the Democratic National Committee and Clinton campaign. The primary subsource made statements during his or her January 2017 interview that were inconsistent with multiple sections of the Steele report, including some that were relied upon in the FISA application. The source said Steele misrepresented or embellished information regarding Page's involvement in what the dossier said was a well-developed conspiracy of cooperation between the Trump campaign and Russian government. Graham said he also wants to know whether former FBI Director James Comey and former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe were ever told about the Steele sources' contradictory statements about the dossier. Graham said, I want to find out when did Comey and McCabe understand it was not reliable and start from there. Well, the report stated that David Loffman, who served until 2018 as the chief of the Justice Department's Counterintelligence and Export Control Section, arranged and took part in the interview with the dossier source in January of 2017. His deputy also participated, an FBI counterintelligence investigator identified as Case Agent 1, and a supervisory intel agent also took part in that interview. The report is particularly harsh toward Case Agent Number 1, who was involved in drafting the FISA Page application. Case Agent 1 was primarily responsible for some of the most significant errors and omissions in the FISA applications, which, of course, resulted in the Carter Page investigation. The Justice Department deemed the last two FISA orders granted against Page to be invalid, based largely on the FBI's omissions of what Steele's sources said about the dossier. If there had not been the Steele dossier, there would not have been the investigation, the Mueller report, and so on. Well, Graham sent a letter to Attorney General William Barr in February asking that he make 17 current Justice Department and FBI employees identified in the Inspector General's report available for closed-door depositions. Case Agent Number 1 is included in that list. Graham has also said that he wants to have open hearings with Comey and McCabe. We'll see where that goes in yet another investigation. President Trump lashed out last week at Senator Chris Murphy for meeting with Iran's foreign minister and accused the Democrat senator of illegally violating the Logan Act. Now, the Logan Act was enacted way back in 1799, but it bars Americans from conducting rogue negotiations with foreign governments in disputes with the United States. No one has ever been successfully prosecuted under this obscure federal law, but some critics suggest in 2017 that Trump's former national security advisor Michael Flynn ran afoul of the law in his dealings with Russia before Trump took office. Murphy himself called for investigations at the time. Trump, on Wednesday last, argued the Connecticut senator is now the one in breach of that law, suggesting he face consequences. Carrion Murphy illegally violated the Logan Act, he tweeted, this is the president, Wednesday, in reference to the former Secretary of State, John Kerry, as well. This is why Iran is not making a deal, must be dealt with strongly, end quote. Again, this is a tweet. Well, Murphy met with Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, while at the Munich Security Conference, declaring if Trump isn't going to talk to Iran, then someone should. Once hearing the news of Murphy's visit, the president previewed his line of attack to reporters. I saw that Senator Murphy met with the Iranians. Is that a fact? Trump said on Tuesday before boarding Air Force One. I just saw that on the way over. Is there anything I should know? He's asking the reporters, apparently, because that sounds like to me a violation of the Logan Act. Now, my guess is he's fully briefed already, but was making a point. He had previously accused Kerry of meeting the Iranians and trying to undermine his foreign policy. A spokesman for the former Senator Kerry and former Secretary of State responded, saying, "We've addressed this many times before. The president is still tweeting, is still wrong, and is still trying to distract from his diplomatic malpractice on Iran." Mr. Flynn wasn't prosecuted for Logan Act violations, but in 2017, he pled guilty to making false statements to the FBI in relation to the Russia probe. If you recall, he has since reversed himself, saying he is not guilty, and that is yet to be resolved. You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. 31 minutes after 4 o'clock is our time.
You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
35 minutes after 4 o'clock, you're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. Coming up in the second hour of the program, we'll talk with Phyllis Bennett and Bethany Allen, both a part of Arise, Ignite, Compassion. It's a conference sponsored by Western Seminary for Women that's coming up on Saturday, the 7th of March at Cedar Mill Bible Church. We'll give you all the important details when they join us later in the next hour. Well, President Trump and First Lady Melania visited the Taj Mahal on Monday, hours after the president gave a rousing speech to more than 110,000 at a cricket stadium in India. The president and First Lady strolled around the grounds of India's most famous attraction, taking in the sights. It was a rare occasion of the president visiting a cultural site on an international visit. The president, who once owned the Trump Taj Mahal Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City, really no comparison, just saying, which was inspired by the Indian landmark, had never visited the Indian site until now. Well, the president's daughter Ivanka and her husband, Jared, were also on hand, taking photos in front of the building. Earlier, the president was greeted by large crowds at the rally, where he announced a $3 billion deal that will send state-of-the-art military helicopters to the country. The rally, titled Namaste Trump, was a sequel to the Howdy Modi event Trump held with Prime Minister Narendra Modi in Houston last September. The motorcade passed seemingly endless crowds in the area, which many waved and cheered with American flags along the way. 110,000 capacity stadium where the rally was conducted. Large billboards were spread throughout the region, showing Modi alongside the president and his wife, Melania. Well, near the entrance to the stadium, camels on either side of the road were seen greeting the motorcade, which the announcers described as a camelcade. The largest cricket stadium in the world appeared to be full, with banners displaying the president's name throughout. Well, before Modi and Trump came out on the stage, the song Macho Man by the Village People was heard playing in the stadium. When the music stopped, they arrived on stage and both leaders had their arms around or arms in the air. Shortly after each country's national anthem played, Modi began speaking to the crowd about shared values and ideas as the president sat in his chair beside First Lady Melania. All three were located in a large bulletproof chamber that took up most of the stage, the president and First Lady remaining there. Former Hollywood film producer Harvey Weinstein was found guilty by a Manhattan jury today of two of the five charges relating to sexual assaults and faces as many as 25 years in prison. He was found guilty of a criminal sex act for assaulting production assistant Mimi Haleya at his apartment in 2006 and a third degree rape of a woman in 2013. The jury found him not guilty on the most serious charge, predatory sexual assault, which could have resulted in a life sentence, although at his age and health, 25 years in prison is probably a life sentence. He was ordered to a jail by the judge immediately after the conviction. He will not be returning home. The verdict followed weeks of often harrowing and excruciatingly graphic testimony from a string of accusers who told of illegal acts, and I won't go into the details because they're disgusting. The jury of seven men and five women handed down the verdict on Monday after 5 days of deliberating. Weinstein has maintained his encounters were consensual. Sentencing will be set or has been set for March 11th. The case against the once feared producer was essentially built on three allegations. And the case marks the only criminal trial to stem from the many accusations that came regarding Weinstein following a bombshell expose written by Ronan Farrow in 2017, in which 13 women accused the now disgraced movie mogul of sexual assault. It's difficult to imagine how the mighty has fallen in this case. He was the most powerful man in Hollywood. now facing up to 25 years in prison. Fears of a global pandemic continue to grow as the coronavirus cases spike in several countries, including Italy, South Korea, and Iran. And the U.S. stock market nosedived early today. A staggering 50 people died in the Iranian city of Qom from the new coronavirus in the month of February, Iran's semi-official news agency reported on Monday. The new death toll is significantly higher than the latest number of confirmed cases that Iranian officials had reported just a few hours earlier, which stood at just 12 deaths out of 47 cases. The 50 deaths date back to the 13th of February, according to an Iranian official. Iran previously reported its cases and deaths from the virus on the 19th of February. Authorities are struggling to contain and understand the outbreak in those countries where infected cases have skyrocketed as they have increased over 2,000% in the past couple weeks. Italy is considered the site of Europe's first major outbreak and the largest outside of Asia. The number of infected cases jumped to 152 compared to just 10 days ago. The country is currently scrambling to disrupt the spread of the virus, which has seen at least 110 cases in Milan, its financial district, and Venice, known as a famous hub for tourists throughout the world. Events and soccer matches were canceled in the country, while some of its movie theaters were reportedly shuttered, including Milan's legendary La Scala. "We're worried about the situation in the Islamic Republic of Iran and in Italy." That's a quote from the World Health Organization chief at a conference in Stockholm. Cases in South Korea increased to 763 on Monday, with 161 more people infected within the last 24 hours. The country has just 28 infected cases or had on the 14th of February. President Moon Jae-in called for unprecedented powerful steps on Sunday to fight the virus, which is spreading rapidly throughout the country, including the capital of Seoul. "The coming few days will be a critical time for us," he said. "The central government, local governments, health officials and medical personnel and the entire people must wage an all-out concerted response to the problem." He raised the threat level to red alert, its highest national threat level for the first time in a decade. More than 140 of South Korea's new cases were from a city about 2.5 million people. Five of the country's seven deaths occurred at a hospital near the city. The country has the third highest infected total behind China and Japan, where most of the country's infected were from the Diamond Princess cruise ship. The story is developing. Meanwhile, the Dow cratered over 1,000 points as the coronavirus spread. U.S. equity markets were under severe pressure following the surge in the number of coronavirus cases. The Dow Jones Industrial plummeted by as many as 1,030 points or 3.6% before slightly trimming its losses, while the S&P 500 and NASDAQ fell by as much as 3.5% and 4% respectively. The early selling dropped the Dow into negative territory in 2020. Now, the concern is many of the parts that make up the stuff we buy and use comes from all over the world, including China and South Korea and other places as well. And that certainly will undermine the markets. We'll continue to follow that story. An estimated 40 million people are trafficked around the world every year. So says the leader of a group training healthcare providers to help identify and rescue victims. One research study of survivors in 2014 found that 88% of victims seek medical care and treatment while being trafficked. A critical care nurse who co-founded Global Strategic Operatives, an organization that combats human trafficking. Other studies confirm it to be 80% to 90%, hence our reason to focus on the healthcare sector. Healthcare has a great opportunity to identify and provide these victims with a path to freedom. Well, the first study she cited by Laura Lederer and Christopher Wetzel was published in the Loyola University Chicago School of Law's Journal of Health Law. Human trafficking comes in many different forms, and the mission of O'Hara, the group, is to eradicate all of those, including sexual exploitation, forced labor, and organ harvesting, by equipping the healthcare sector with the tools to stop such trafficking as it identifies victims, which can be something of a challenge. Most human trafficking victims seek medical attention, she said, but they largely go undetected because of misperception by medical professionals about how to identify them and because of a lack of training on the proper action to take. Global Strategic Operatives, founded in 2018, partnered with Selah Way Foundation, which founded Selah Freedom as a separate organization dedicated to ending sex trafficking. Well, the pilot program is intended to educate healthcare workers on how to identify signs of trafficking and to take action on victims' behalf. Healthcare professionals from six healthcare systems around the country gathered to discuss the launch of the pilot program, along with leaders from Global Strategic Operatives and Selah Way. Well, those represented included Baptist Health in Florida, Advocate Aurora Health in Illinois, and Barnabas Health, Hackensack Meridian Health, both in Jersey, Northwell Health in New York, Harris Health System, and Baylor College of Medicine, both in Texas. At least one medical professional from each spoke at the event regarding progress in their training. And it's encouraging to consider that there is a coordinated effort to identify and rescue those who are caught up in the cycle of human trafficking. I'm so looking forward. It probably won't happen until March or April. A group of organizations here in our community that's doing incredible work in this area, we're going to talk with them. We're trying to put something together based on their schedule, which is always very full. We're going to take this issue on head on, and I'm looking forward to that opportunity. 46 minutes after 4 o'clock, you're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
We're back 51 minutes after 4 o'clock. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. Hey, coming up after the top of the hour, so excited, Phyllis Bennett. She's the director of the Women's Center for Ministry at Western Seminary and Women's Transformational Leadership. Bethany Allen, who's the pastor of spiritual formation and leadership development at Bridgetown Church in downtown Portland. She's also an instructor with the Women's Transformational Leadership Program at Western Seminary. Well, Phyllis is representing Western Seminary. Bethany is going to be the keynote speaker at the upcoming Ignite Conference. It comes around every year, and it's a great opportunity to hear from some dynamic local speakers in the breakout sessions. And this year, Bethany Allen will be featured as the keynote speaker in the general sessions. We're going to talk about all the details for that upcoming conference on the 7th of March. But if you just can't wait and need to register beforehand, let me encourage you to go to westernseminary.edu/ignite. And there you will find all the important details. Let me just give you a heads up. The sooner you register, the lower the price will be. So, and there are also some group rates. So if you want to come with your Bible study or, you know, a small group of friends, you can check that out at the website as well. Well, a group of Wisconsin parents is asking a state court to halt a public school district's policy that they say instructs teachers to assist and encourage children in adopting transgender identities without notifying and possibly while deceiving parents. The lawsuit's being brought by 14 parents representing 8 families who allege the Madison Metropolitan School District's policy violates constitutionally protected parental rights. Are parental rights still constitutionally protected, one wonders? Well, the lawsuit filed in Dane County Circuit Court includes an affidavit from Dr. Stephen B. Levine, a distinguished life fellow of the American Psychiatric Association, in which he asserts that gender transition for minors expose vulnerable children to dangerous lifelong physical, social, and mental health risks. For a child to live radically different identities at home and at school and to conceal what he or she perceives to be his or her true identity from parents is psychologically unhealthy in itself and could readily lead to additional psychological problems. He writes in the affidavit that extended secrecy and a double life concealed from the parents is rarely the path to psychological health. For this reason, at least, schools should not support deceit of parents. Well, the affidavit continues, most children are both legally and developmentally incapable of giving informed consent to such a life-altering intervention. And parents, of course, cannot give informed consent if the fact of their child's wishes to assume a transgender identity is concealed from them. The 14 parents are represented by an attorney at Alliance Defending Freedom and the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, both nonprofit public interest legal organizations. This is a life-altering decision that educators have no business making, Roger Brooks with ADF, a senior counsel, says. As Dr. Levine explains, based on decades of experience and extensive scientific literature, putting children on a pathway to puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones can have devastating effects across a lifetime. That should serve as a wake-up call to parents and all Americans when school casts aside biological reality in favor of gender identity ideology. It's children who are hurt the most, end quote. Well, the legal motion formally requests the court to impose a temporary injunction against the school district policy. The school district hadn't been served with the lawsuit as of late Wednesday, the public information officer from the Metropolitan School District said. But the school district prioritizes working in collaboration with families to support their students, and it's always our preferred method of support, the formal statement went on to say. The school district must also prioritize the safety and well-being of every individual student who walks through its doors each day. It is with this focus that the district stands by its guidance document on transgender and non-binary students who recognize its tremendous responsibility to uphold the right of every child to be educated in a safe, all-inclusive, and non-discriminatory-leaning environment. Now, that would include, according to the policy as it has been practiced up to this point, excluding parents from that life-altering decision. Well, here in Oregon, the Senate Republicans left the Capitol this morning, part of a boycott of an upcoming floor vote on the cap and trade bill after it passed out of a joint committee on Monday morning. Now, that comes as no surprise to those of us who have been following this. The Joint Ways and Means Committee deadlocked on the vote, but the tie break was broken by Senate President Peter Courtney, who used his official powers to overcome a no vote by Democrat Betsy Johnson of Scappoose. Also defeated was a Republican amendment to send the Senate bill to voters. The official GOP statement on the boycott, Senator Courtney's actions leave no other option for Senate Republicans but to boycott and deny quorum because cap and trade is on the way to the Senate floor. Democrats refused to work with Republicans and denied every amendment that was presented. Pay attention, Oregon. This is a true example of partisan politics. Instead of referring this legislation to let the people decide, the Democrats are willfully ignoring 26 counties and one district representing nearly 2 million Oregonians that have signed proclamations against cap and trade to push their agenda. End quote. Well, after the Ways and Means Committee adjourned, the Senate convened with virtually all Republicans already absent. Peter Courtney made an impassioned plea to his Republican colleagues to return. If passed, the bill would limit the amount of emissions Oregonians pump into the atmosphere over time. The question is, what will it cost? Well, the bill itself is not directly creating new taxes on gas or anything else. It is making big polluters buy carbon credits from the state. Those credits will allow them to release emissions. However, because those industries will be paying for credits, the companies are expected to raise their prices on gas and utilities. It will also have an impact on goods and services that are transported using, well, gas and utilities. Democrats thought they had the votes to get it through the committee on Monday morning, but Republican Senator Tim Knope, he thought otherwise. The Democrats have 7 votes. Republicans have 5 votes. And Betsy Johnson, Senator Betsy Johnson from Scappoose, is one of the Democrat votes. She is opposed to the bill, Knope said. So it will be a high drama 9 a.m. Monday morning, and it certainly was that. The drama ended quickly as Courtney forced the bill to pass, a big power play. Senate Majority Leader Jenny Burdick said that they have made a lot of compromises, and the bill looks different than it did last session when a walkout brought that effort to a close. She said it now better reflects the interests of all Oregonians. We're an urban state, a suburban state, and we're a rural state, and all those voices are important and all need to be taken into account when we do a bill like this, Burdick said. Bottom line, we don't want to lose a single job in Oregon, and we want to create many, many more jobs in our new clean energy economy. Well, Senator Knopes thinks that the key elements of the bill should be decided by voters, since it will have a significant impact on the cost of living. All of the Republicans I am aware of are voting no on the bill, he says. They think it's too complicated, too expensive, and inefficient to do carbon reduction in the way that that's currently being suggested. Well, a politics analyst from KGW said the walkout, the second such move in consecutive legislative sessions, will change politics as we know it in Oregon. If every time that you don't agree with someone, you walk out, that's what happens. It may my way or the highway. Well, in this case, it's not my way or the highway. It's Oregonians having an opportunity to vote on legislation that will have a major impact on their way of life and referring to it as an emergency so that they do not have the opportunity to weigh in on it in any time within the next 2 years. So it's a little bit misleading characterization of what's happening with this walkout. Well, a bill to provide $45 million to open homeless shelters and to allow them to be located regardless of zoning, planning, and design rules got unanimous support from the House Rules Committee on Friday. Lawmakers from both parties, and again, we're talking about the Oregon legislature, agreed that the fact that roughly 6,000 Oregonians sleep outside in communities all around the state constitutes an emergency that justifies waiving zoning rules. House Bill 4001, a top priority for House Speaker Tina Kotek, now heads to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Kotek testified that suspending zoning and design rules until July of 2021 to allow shelters to be located almost anywhere makes sense, given that we have unsheltered homeless at catastrophic levels in the state. We have to treat this like a disaster that it is and get things sited as soon as possible. Bend Republican Sherry Helt, a former member of the Bend School Board, testified in support of the bill, noting that when Bend officials tried to open a warming center for homeless people when the temperatures reached 12 degrees, they were unable to secure a place to do so. The school district had about 600 students without a permanent home of their own. This bill is designed to remedy that. We'll revisit some of those details at some point in the not-too-distant future. News and traffic coming up next, and then in the second hour, we'll talk about Ignite. The conference is coming May the 7th, and we'd love you to come. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to the second hour of the Georgene Rice Show. In this hour, we're going to talk with Phyllis Bennett. She's the director of the Women's Center for Ministry at Western Seminary and Women's Transformational Leadership. We'll also talk with Bethany Allen. She's the pastor of Spiritual Formation and Leadership Development at Bridgetown Church in downtown Portland. She's also a Women's Transformational Leadership instructor at Western Seminary. Now, Bethany is going to be the keynote speaker at the upcoming Ignite Conference, Arise, Ignite, Compassion. That's coming up Saturday, March the 7th. We'll talk with Phyllis and Bethany about that and invite you to join us. This is going to be a significant conference, and we'd love for you to come. In fact, I get to co-MC with Phyllis, and I'll be doing one of the breakout sessions. So we'll get into that with the two of them in the next couple segments of the program. Well, an initiative featuring the writings of African Americans is going to counter and rebut a New York Times Magazine project that reframes all of U.S. history around slavery and racism, making the point that that's what this whole nation is about. Well, the Woodson Center last week announced the sponsorship of 1776, again, to counter the 1619 Project narrative. It's a collection of essays and other material mostly written by Black scholars and community and business leaders, among other backgrounds. Well, their goal is to tell the complete history of America and Black Americans in particular from 1776 to the present. Well, the 1776 initiative directly rebuts the so-called 1619 Project that was introduced back in August by the New York Times Magazine. The purpose of that project, according to an initial mission statement, is to reframe the country's history, understanding 1619 as our true founding, end quote. Well, the creators chose the year 1619 because it's when African slaves first were brought to Britain's Virginia colony in America. The 1776 Project will take an entirely different track. Now, these Black scholars and leaders are rebuking 1619's narrative of victimhood. Says one of the contributors, the mission statement, our focus is on solving problems. We do this in the spirit of 1776, the date of America's true founding. Bob Woodson Sr., founder and president of the Washington-based Woodson Center, said that at the very least, the 1619 Project has stimulated a much-needed debate in the Black community. The problem is that it defines America as being racist, Woodson said of the Times Endeavor. Simply put, all white people are beneficiaries of privilege and are victimizers, and all Black people are victims, end quote. Message made. Well, that message, he said, is dangerous for the future of the country because it teaches Americans to make excuses for failure. Worse, it defines America as an evil empire with fundamental principles that are corrupt and hypocritical. Now, Woodson is now 82. He's worked for decades to lift African-American neighborhoods out of dysfunction. He said the 1776 essay would be an aspirational and inspirational alternative to the Times Project, embracing the founders and their ideas rather than rebuking them. The Coleman Hughes is an undergraduate student at Columbia University. He said the prevailing attitude at American universities is that oppression and racism is in our country's DNA, that they are essential elements of what we are. Today, we are challenging that false narrative, Hughes says. Any argument that says the institution of slavery is what makes America unique must grapple with the fact that slavery was practiced in almost every society on Earth until just a few centuries ago, and still in some areas, as well as the fact that most of those societies have done far less to acknowledge and atone for it. To point to America's worst sin, Hughes says, is to point out what is least unique about us. Other 1776 contributors were critical of the way the 1619 Project connects the institution of slavery with the lives of Black Americans today. The project offers a very crippling message to our children. Carol Swain, an author and former professor at Princeton and Vanderbilt Universities, who is host of the Be the People podcast, "I was spared from having that message brought to me," Swain says, "and I believe that if I had been exposed to that, if I had internalized that negative message, I don't believe I would have been able to do the things that I've done in life." She said white children are being shamed for their sin, their skin color, and Black children are being taught that they can't accomplish things because of discrimination. She said 1776 will help counter those destructive messages. An interesting project. I'm looking forward to fully exploring it once completed. Well, a legion of 20,000 mourners, from devoted fans to the greatest living legends of the NBA, celebrated the lives of Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter Gianna at a public memorial today at the Staples Center, the arena revered as the house that Kobe built in downtown Los Angeles. The public service comes nearly a month after a helicopter crashed into a foggy hillside in Calabasas, California, killing Bryant, Gianna, and seven others on board. Well, in the days after the crash, an estimated 250,000 mourners paid tribute to the Los Angeles Lakers legend outside the arena with makeshift memorials, the Los Angeles Times reported. But the event today was handled differently, with police urging fans to stay away from the area unless they had a ticket. The memorial took place at about 8 a.m. Pacific time, and members of the public had to purchase a ticket to attend the service, which was sold out rather quickly. Meantime, Vanessa Bryant, the widow of Kobe Bryant, reportedly filed a lawsuit against the helicopter company that owned the aircraft that was carrying her husband and her daughter, Kobe and Gigi, as they called her, and seven others in the fog and crashed last month. Island Express, which owned the helicopter, was only allowed to fly under visual flight rules, and the conditions were not fit for flying, according to TMZ. According to the suit, the pilot was flying at a high rate of speed. It also noted that he was disciplined in 2015 for violating flying rules by traversing into areas with low visibility. He was also given responsibility for his mistake, was counseled by a Federal Aviation Administration investigator in 2015 for that incident, according to the L.A. Times. Another pilot told the newspaper the violation was considered minor, and he doesn't know a pilot who hasn't violated that rule. Nonetheless, a lawsuit has been filed. My guess is Vanessa Bryant won't be the only survivor that will be a party to that lawsuit. Well, Katherine Johnson, a NASA mathematician and trailblazer for racial justice, who's one of the space agency's most inspirational leaders, has died. She was 101. Johnson died on Monday of natural causes at a retirement community in Newport News, Virginia, according to her family's attorney. NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine said in a statement that Johnson helped our nation enlarge the frontiers of space, even as she made huge strides that also opened doors for women and people of color in the universal human quest to explore space. Her dedication and skill as a mathematician helped put humans on the moon, and before that, made it possible for our astronauts to take the first steps in space that we now follow on a journey to Mars. Well, Johnson initially worked with other Black women in a racially segregated computing unit in Hampton, Virginia, that wasn't officially dissolved until NACA became NASA in 1958. Signs had dictated which bathrooms the women could use. Johnson focused on airplanes and other research at first, but her work at NASA's Langley Research Center eventually shifted to Project Mercury, the nation's first human space program. Johnson was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Obama in November of 2015, and the esteemed mathematician was featured in the 2016 film Hidden Figures, which told the story of a group of African-American women whose contributions were integral to NASA's initial space mission. She was portrayed by the actress Taraji Henson in the movie, which won several awards. She was born in 1918 in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. She graduated from West Virginia State College with the highest honors in 1937. And when West Virginia decided to integrate its graduate schools in 1939, The West Virginia State President, Dr. John Davis, selected her and two men to be the first black students offered spots at the state's flagship school in West Virginia University. After attending the graduate school there, working as a public school teacher, she was hired in 53 to what was known as NASA's Langley Research Center, but then was called the Langley Memorial Aeronautical Laboratory. She retired in 1986, loved going to work every day, she says, and made a significant difference in her time there. Well, these are names that we will remember, whose contributions we're familiar with, but this month also features the five-year anniversary, 5 years ago this month, when ISIS executed 21 Christian men on a beach in Libya. Their masked executioners stood in all black behind the men who knelt in a line wearing orange jumpsuits. You've probably seen the picture. After the Islamic State released a video of their murder, images of their massacre of Coptic Christians reverberated around the world. Despite the cultural impact, Egyptian Christians have long experienced persecution. Their names we probably will never know, and their stories even less. But they are remembered in heaven. There won't be any, and there wasn't at the time, a big stadium to celebrate their lives. There won't be any news articles with their names and achievements, but their names were written in the Lamb's Book of Life, and they are remembered by the one to whom it matters most. Coming up, we're going to talk with Phyllis Bennett. She's the director of the Women's Center for Ministry and Women's Transformational Leadership at Western Seminary, and Bethany Allen, pastor of spiritual formation and leadership development at Bridgetown Church in downtown Portland. We're going to talk about the Ignite Conference coming up on the 7th of March, Arise, Ignite Compassion. More on that when we return. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show.
You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. And I've been looking forward to this next conversation for quite some time. I have with me in studio this afternoon Phyllis Bennett. She is director of the Women's Center for Ministry and Women's Transformational Leadership, and Bethany Allen, who's going to be the keynote speaker at this year's Ignite Conference. Bethany is a pastor of spiritual formation and leadership development at Bridgetown Church and Women's Transformational Leadership instructor at Western Seminary. She earned a Master of Arts in Specialized Ministry with a focus in pastoral care to women from Western Seminary. And I am delighted to have you both with me here today, because we get an opportunity to share with our listeners what's happening just a couple weeks from now. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much, Georgene. We're thrilled to be here.
Thank you for having us. Oh, we're so excited.
Absolutely. Arise, Ignite Compassion. That is the name of this year's Ignite Conference that is sponsored by Western Seminary's Women's Center for Ministry. I want to begin with you, Phyllis. Tell us a little bit about the Women's Center for Ministry and then about this year's conference, Arise, Ignite Compassion.
Well, the Women's Center has been around for more than 20 years, begun by Bev Hislop a good number of years ago, and she's our founder and role model to both Bethany and me. We just love her so much. And it's just such a privilege to be the director of the Women's Center and to see the growth and all that God's done through it. And one of those things has been this wonderful conference, Ignite, our spring conference. And this year's theme, every year, a brainstorming team of about 35 leaders from around the city gathers in the Women's Center, and we spend a whole morning praying together, seeking the Lord's heart for what he has in mind for his city, because we feel like it's his city we're serving, for the next year. And at that brainstorming time, we're all together, we worship, and then we break down into smaller groups. And I happened to be in a small group with Bonnie Knopf. And she just had this burning sense that God wanted us as a whole city to arise to a greater triumph for him, to do things for the kingdom of God. So oftentimes conferences really focus on what's good for me and helping me get well. But if we're going to focus on recovering from wounds, then let's do it to arise. Let's do it to arise for the sake of someone else, because God's kingdom and moving his kingdom forward is what it's all about. And I love this woman that's with me because she's such a kingdom lover.
Well, in fact, you were telling me that Bethany is one of the best teachers in our community.
Absolutely.
I gave a brief introduction, but you share your heart about Bethany, and then I want to talk to you a little bit about just that.
Yeah, I met Bethany in a speaking class that I teach at Western Seminary. And when you have the sense that somebody you've trained is going way past you, that's exactly how I feel about Bethany. She just has such a passion for the Word of God and helping it come alive. I can hardly wait for women to hear what she has to say at this conference.
In fact, you were telling me that you had read through her notes for that weekend, and you were literally brought to tears.
Yes, in the middle of the night. Yeah, I woke up and the Lord just said it was time for me to pray, and so I went into my study, and while I was in there, I thought, she just sent me this a day and a half ago, and I haven't had a chance to read it. So in the middle of the night, I'm reading it just in tears, just saying, oh my goodness, Lord, you have such a word for the women of our city. I can hardly wait to share this and have Bethany share it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bethany, you will have an opportunity to share. That's coming up on Saturday, March the 7th. It's a day-long conference at Cedar Mill Bible Church, about 8:50 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tell us a little bit about your heart for women in this city and what you're going to be sharing in Ignite.
Yeah, super excited. I love Portland. I'm not a native Portlandier. Is that what we say? Portlandier?
We say a lot of things
Portlander.
Here. That's one of them.
Portlander. So there's been just this deep, holy affection God's given me for the city over the last 12 years. So I've been here a good amount of time, so I feel decently qualified to speak to it. But yeah, I've had a heart since I can remember for women in the kingdom of God, period. But then as God immersed me in the city of Portland, there was just a growing burden to see God not just, bring women up to an intellectual space of understanding of who he is, or the realities of the kingdom of God, but to actually, for lack of a better word, ignite in them something prophetic for not just the church in Portland, but for the city of Portland, something that testifies to something better than what the world is saying. So that's so much of my heart for women. It's what I get to do at Bridgetown. It's also just a lot of who I am. And then when it came to this message, at first Phyllis comes, it's like, hey, this is the theme. And I was stoked about it. I was like, this is awesome. And at the same time, I was like, wait, am I the right person to do this? Like, I had this moment where I was like, am I the person? Because it's driven. There's so much to talk about when it comes to injustice and inequity and different things like that. And I thought, am I the one who's versed in this? And quickly the Lord just spoke to me and just said, I'm inviting you into this for you to lean in a new way that will ignite and activate something in you. And that's been a sacrificial space for me as I've leaned into this teaching, leaned into the text, and really leaned into what does it mean to lament? And then from our lament, from the ache of our hearts, to be catalyzed into something that actually eradicates the kingdom of darkness and replaces it with the kingdom of light. And I'm just stoked. I've been blown away at what God has done. Even writing these teachings, it came easily because I really believe it's a word from the Spirit of God.
That's always so exciting when we know that God is speaking, and it really exceeds our own capacity to just kind of come up with it on our own.
Yes.
And he has a message that, first of all, he teaches your own heart, and then you're able to share that with other women.
Yeah.
What do you hope the response will be, or hope that the response will be? Obviously, the theme is arise, ignite compassion. But what do you hope, when you've had an opportunity to speak, women will respond?
Yeah. Man, I don't care about conferences where you go and get something, get your needs met, and then go home. I'm not that kind of person. So I have really prayed and am praying, begging God to bring lots of women to this space, not for the purpose of numbers, who cares? Not for the purpose of, just like a really cool experience with so many women, but that God would actually catalyze in us, one, that he would bring healing. And I'm even praying for miraculous healing of the heart and the emotions and different places in us where we've experienced the inequity and injustice of life and the suffering that comes with it, so that God would heal people. But then also from our spaces of healing, we'd look to other people and go, how is this to be utilized for the kingdom of God? That there would actually be transformation. Yes, compassion, but compassion that moves us to actually, for lack of a better word, be the hands and feet of Jesus, to actually demonstrate the realities of the kingdom of God as Jesus told us we would do in this city. So I'm asking God for true transformation. I'm like, I don't want to come and sit under your word and sit in a space of worship and not be transformed by you. Who has time for that anyway?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I so often think about women who are wounded, and that's true for anyone in the body of Christ. We sometimes languish in our woundedness without even having a vision of the prospect of moving forward, of God somehow using us, because our wounds have branded us in such a way that we can't imagine that we could be useful to the kingdom. So it seems to me what you're talking about is women right where we are, with all the stuff that we have experienced, all the things that have been done to us, or perhaps we've done to others, that God can somehow minister to us and then through us And that's part of what Ignite, this was the weekend of the 7th, will be all about.
Absolutely. Lord willing.
Yeah. Now, Phyllis, it's a challenge to inform women that there's an opportunity for them to come together around God's word to experience something significant. Let's talk about women who have not heard about the conference, who might just now be thinking, wow, that sounds like something I need to attend. How do women connect?
Well, they can go to kbq.com, and we're listed there, and then at Western Seminary on the Ignite site. But how do they connect with the conference? Is that your question?
Well, generally, people want to know, when is it, where is it, and I can fill that in. We're talking about the conference that's taking place on Saturday, March the 7th. It's a day-long conference at Cedar Mill Bible Church. Things will start at about 8:50 and run until 4 p.m. Now, there is a cost. It's minimal, and I'm always impressed at how you're able to keep the cost down. The cost for per individual is $32. However, if you're slow to say, yeah, I'm coming to the conference, it's going to cost you a little bit more. Late registration will begin midnight March the 7th, and that's going to cost March the 1st. That'll cost you $37, and the price increases at midnight.
And then Monday night, it increases to $40.
Yes, you can check all that out at the website for more information. Also, online registration closes on Tuesday, March the 3rd at midnight, and the cost at the door is $40. There's an opportunity to purchase lunch, so you can stay right there on campus with your girls and enjoy a great time of ministry together. Again, we're talking about Arise, Ignite Compassion. It's the 2020 Ignite Conference this year at Cedar Mill Bible Church. We're going to continue our conversation in just a few moments, but do need to take a quick break. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show here with Phyllis Bennett and Bethany Allen.
You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
We're back. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show here with Phyllis Bennett and Bethany Allen. Phyllis is the director of the Women's Center for Ministry and Women's Transformational Leadership, and Bethany Allen is going to be the keynote speaker at Arise Ignite Compassion. She's a pastor of spiritual formation and leadership development at Bridgetown Church right here in Portland, and she's also Women's Transformational Leadership instructor at Western Seminary. How she has time to do this other, I don't know, but Bethany has a Master of Arts in Specialized Ministry with a focus in pastoral care to women from Western Seminary as well. Now, in addition to the keynote speaker, Bethany, you're going to be providing, there are other opportunities for women to learn and grow in breakout sessions. Phyllis, tell us about them.
Well, we have 20 of them, 10 in the morning and 10 in the afternoon, and all of them have the sense of arise, and the end goal is to your kingdom call. So whether it would be arise from other father wounds to your kingdom call, and that will be a panel of women who have had know that they've had mother and father wounds, but they're going to help you to see into my kingdom call. And so God has healed me to the extent that I can overcome that and move into the kingdom call. Arise to justice for the marginalized. I can hardly wait for Ashley Bell and Joy Roberts to teach on that one. Arise to parenting the I generation. And we're longing for parents to come and see, how do I tackle this whole issue of the internet and the kind of influence it's having on my kids to be a successful parent in that climate. Arise to igniting gospel conversations in everyday life and work. What's it like to be in the workplace and actually make contacts and use every opportunity that God brings your way? Karen Howells is wonderful at that, and we're just thrilled. She was our keynote last year, and just thrilled to have her speak to that topic. Arise to greater intimacy and friendship. We feel like women are needing deeper friendship in order for them to be involved in kingdom ministry. And so that too will be a panel of intergenerational and interethnic talking with each other about how do we build those friendships that are going to help us to link arms for the sake of the kingdom. So that's always that kingdom focus with each one of these different topics. Arise as one who has hope, taught by Sandy Snavely, our dear friend who just lost her husband, Bud, a year ago. And she really believes that women need to grieve as women who have hope rather than as being women
who are
hopeless.
She has such tremendous insight.
She does.
That's born out of experience.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm thrilled for what she's going to bring to us. So Arise to Reconciled Relationships with Julie Weidman and Widman. I always say that wrong. Widman and Mary Meriwether. Thrilled to have them. So I just think it's going to be exciting to see what the whole emphasis on we're going to be up and trusting God to move us forward for the sake of his kingdom.
The thing I love about each of the breakout sessions that you've mentioned is each one of them, as Bethany, you were suggesting, encourages us to arise. We're not just supposed to bask in what we've learned. We're not just supposed to learn and accumulate knowledge, but God is calling us to get up and move forward in for the sake of the kingdom in ministry. And that's exciting to me because we are saturated with opportunities to learn, but to be encouraged by women who are determined to make a difference in the culture, to be a force in the kingdom. Now that is something you want to be a part of.
Yes.
Now, Bethany, as we mentioned, you're going to be the keynote speaker. You have two opportunities to present. And already Phyllis has mentioned that she is so excited about what you she wouldn't let me see the notes. So I
well, Georgine, I'll send them to you if you ask. You can have them, my friend.
But we're so excited about the opportunity to hear from you and what God has given to you in order to give to us. How challenging is it to prepare for a conference like this? You have women from every background. You have, as you mentioned earlier, multi-generations of women. You have women whose experience vary dramatically from one another. And yet God has made you the point person to speak to us all.
Yeah, no pressure, right? I mean, absolutely. Piece of cake. It was so easy. Next question. Just kidding. I think that for sure there's an intimidation that comes when you're entering into any room where there's a diverse group of people. At the same time, the reality I kept before myself was that this is my family as well. This is the kingdom of God. And, as different as we are, diverse as we are, which is why I do love this conference specifically, is there's such a diversity. I think there's also a similarity in that, you know, we all experience pain, suffering, loss, grief, all of these realities of the world. And I think that was the starting point where I was like, you know, you don't need the experience of something to experience the emotions behind something. So we're all connected through that reality. And I just wanted to lean into what God's heart was. It became easy once I just said, God, what is it that you're seeing? What do you want to say? What do you want to speak to our city and really speak to us, starting with myself, because you can't ever write these teachings unless God's dealing with you. And it's been a deep work of God dealing with me in a season of grief. Truly, I've been in one. And at the same time wrestling through, God, what is it then that moves us forward? So I think, I feel like the ministry of the Spirit is what he does as we just position ourselves underneath him and say, like, we're here and available. And that's all we're doing by showing up to this conference is saying, God, come. We'll hold it open. We'll hold ourselves before you, but you have to come and meet us for this to actually catalyze into something, for there to be healing and life and really this kingdom forward movement. So I'm trusting in all that. I'm hoping for all of that. And I'm really, honestly, with faith, expecting that. I just sense God's already gone before us, that he has specific words for people, and he has freedom and healing. And then really, he has a call for us as a city and a community of people who actually know and live in the truth. And I'm excited about seeing what that looks like.
Yeah. And I'm excited about the people we're putting around Bethany to help that happen as well. I'm so thrilled for Lisa Reef to be leading us in worship. And I have wept through the songs that God has given to her and laid on her heart. And I've worshiped with her through several years of Ignite. But I think this year is really special as far as what she is doing. And then we're going to have the Brown sisters, and they're going to bring a special touch of the Spirit of God. They communicate with God. The presence of God will be there through them. And then Joy of Dance, too, ushering us into the presence of God. They take us into the throne room of God so that we're just about in tears as soon as they come on stage.
Well, it's going to be a wonderful day of women coming together from whatever background, whatever socioeconomic background, young and old, and all of us coming together with one intention, and that is to hear from the Lord and to be prepared to move with him. We're talking about Arise, Ignite Compassion. The conference is coming up on Saturday, March the 7th, this year at Cedar Mill Bible Church. 8:50, that's when the whole thing kicks off. 8:50, we're finished by 4 p.m. And we hope that you will plan to join us. There's online registration that will close on Tuesday, March the 3rd at midnight. You can purchase your registration at the door. That's $40. But if you act now, you can enjoy the lowest price altogether, $32. Now, late registration begins midnight, March the 1st, and the price goes up to $37. I'm not even going to mention that because you need to just go online or call now to make sure that you're going to be a part of this great opportunity. There is a group rate, $27 per individual for groups of 10 women or more. So if your church needs an opportunity to come together, your Bible study, your women's ministry, maybe you just meet with a group of women on a regular basis for coffee and you just need something more, let me encourage you to consider Ignite. The conference, Arise, Ignite Compassion. And if you're a student, we know you are broke. So $17 is what it's going to cost you to come to Ignite. We would love to have you there. What an exciting thing to consider being a young person and having access to such wisdom from women of every age group. To help you avoid making common mistakes and to help you be effective much earlier in your life than you might otherwise. So let me encourage you to avail yourself of this opportunity to learn and grow and be in fellowship with other women of faith. Now, if you happen to be someone who's seeking, but you're not really a follower of Jesus, but you want to know a little bit more about this whole thing of faith, we want to encourage you to join us as well. You're going to hear from some women. All of us started out as unbelievers, but we came at one point to faith in Christ. And you are welcome to join us, to just sit in and listen and learn, to talk with other women who are women of faith. And we want to encourage you to be a part of our time together as well. Arise, Ignite Compassion. Again, that's coming up on Saturday, March the 7th at Cedar Mill Bible Church. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show.
You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
Hey, we're back. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show. I'm just hanging with my girls. Phyllis Bennett is in studio. Bethany Allen. Bethany, in fact, is going to be the keynote speaker at Arise, Ignite Compassion coming up Saturday, March the 7th. So what are you doing on Saturday, March the 7th? Laundry, watch a little TV. You need to come to Ignite. I can guarantee you the benefits you will derive from spending the day with us will certainly outweigh anything else you could be doing. Let me encourage you to check it out, 8:50 to 4 p.m. Saturday, March the 7th at Cedar Mill Bible Church, Arise, Ignite, Compassion. The Brown Sisters are going to be singing. Joy of Dance is going to be, dancing. There are breakout sessions, the keynote session. It's going to be a great day.
And Georgene Rice and I are co-moderating, which I'm very excited about.
I will have
and then she's also doing a breakout session, which a great title, Rise from Cultural Intimidation to Conviction and Confidence. And Bethany's already said she's coming to your session.
I'm going to be there.
Oh, see, now I'm nervous.
No.
Oh, it's going to be absolutely fabulous because you do this all the time. You do.
Well, I'm trying.
Yeah.
Lord, help me.
Yes.
Anyway, all of that is coming up at Arise, Ignite, Compassion. This is a conference that is hosted by Western Seminary, and it comes out of the Women's Center for Ministry and Women's Transformational Leadership. This is such a gift to our community, and I really want to encourage women to come. You know, sometimes you hear seminary, and you think, oh, no, I don't really fit in this group of women, but I've never been to seminary. I thoroughly love and enjoy this conference because these are real women you'd hang out with who have had an encounter with Christ. They have wisdom in a particular area, and we can all avail ourselves of that shared wisdom. So I'm excited about it. So, Bethany, you've got 2 weeks. Are you ready to go?
2 weeks and counting. Yeah, I'm ready to go. I really am. I feel really excited and expectant. I think, I think now the dream is just that people would come, people who are hungry for more of what God has, or curious, honestly, curious about what God is able to do and wants to do among us. So, ready.
And don't come alone. Reach out to that neighbor, or your mother-in-law, or your sister, and you're not going to, I promise you, you are not going to want to be sitting there wishing that you had brought that special friend. That's going to be a heart wrench for you. So bring your friends to experience this together. This is an experience you want to have together.
Yeah. So be sure to invite them. But if they can't come, you are welcome to come by yourself.
Yes.
And I promise you, you will feel at home just hanging out with your sisters at the church around God's Word. Great worship. I love Lisa Reith and the worship team that will be presenting once more. It's not just music time or song time. This is a time of worship where we're led by women who are worship leaders. So I'm looking forward to that. And as we mentioned, the Brown Sisters, who just sing from a life experience of walking with Christ, and that is so evident in the way they lift their voices in song. And Joy of Dance was such a beautiful, soft and gentle presentation of the love of Christ and his provision for us, just kind of a visual of the Holy Spirit that moves in and among us. So this is going to be a great conference. Now, Phyllis, I'm looking here. What's the best way for people to register? What's the website they need to go to in order to be sure? Now, you can go to kpdq.com, and there's a link there. But is there another way that you would encourage people to do that?
Yeah, wouldn't you? It's westernseminary.edu/ignite. That's the best way to do it.
Okay.
So westernseminary.edu/ignite. It's the best way to get there.
And I will make sure there's a link on the Georgine Rice Show Facebook page with that link for you. You can either go to KPDQ or to Western Seminary. Anything we've left out?
I think that pretty much
I think the only one thing I would say, if I'm allowed to, I mean, I don't even know how this radio thing works, is if you're like, that sounds, you know, I don't know. I have a natural aversion. You know, I'm just barely 30, as I like to say. And I have a natural, I'm just kidding. I have a natural aversion to things like, you know, it's easy to go like, oh, it's so intimidating to go to an event like this, or it's so hard, or like, what am I giving up? And I just want to encourage whoever that person is, like, just risk it. I would say take the risk and just know that there's nothing to lose and everything to gain in coming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. There you have it. March the 7th, which is a Saturday, at Cedar Mill Bible Church. A couple things I want to mention before we wrap things up. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk with Craig Springer. He's the author of How to Follow Jesus. You want to know some of the fundamentals? We'll talk about that tomorrow. A practical guide for growing your faith. Also later in the week, we'll talk with Don Everts. He's the author of The Spiritually Vibrant Home, The Power of Messy Prayers, Loud Tables, and Open Doors. Now, I can relate to that. Again, The Spiritually Vibrant Home. And then on Friday, we're going to lighten things up. We'll certainly cover headline news, but we're also going to take a look at the lighter side of the news, so things we don't typically have the time to cover during the course of a very serious week. So hope you can join us for that. In the meantime, I hope you will also take the opportunity to register for Arise Ignite Compassion coming up on Saturday, May the 7th at Cedar Mill Bible Church. I would just hate for you, and I hear this quite often, oh, I wanted to go to that. I don't want to hear you say, I wanted to go to that. Let me encourage you, register, plan to attend Arise Ignite Compassion. This is one of the hallmark events of the calendar for women in the Portland metro area. And to consider how God is going to draw our hearts and our lives together in order that we might have an impact on our city is a pretty exciting development. So I hope you'll plan to join us. Well, Phyllis and Bethany, thank you so much for joining us here today. I really have enjoyed having you with us.
Thanks for having us.
And when you come, we are two redheads, just in case you're wondering.
And just to clarify, she's talking about Phyllis herself and Bethany. I, on the other hand, I'm not a ginger, so don't confuse me.
If you'd like to be a voluntary member, you're welcome to join.
We would love to have you join us.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. All right. That's it for the Georgine Rice Show. I want to thank James Blind for producing, Clark Hilton for engineering, Chris Williams for engineering a portion of today's program, and thank you for making the Georgine Rice Show part of your day. Also want to remind you, we're going to be giving away a 4-pack of tickets all through this week for Amy Barnes, the comedian. So listen up for your opportunity to win throughout this week. Hey, have a good night.
Thanks for listening to the Georgine Rice Show podcast. If you'd like to download a podcast of the show or would like more information on today's guests, please visit the show at kpdq.com or on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter at GRice Show and like us on Facebook. And join us live every weekday at 4 for more critical thinking for critical times on 93.9 KPDQ.